Welcome to Try Not to Blink, a podcast about the ups and downs, ins and outs, news, tips, and tricks of those who live the optometry lifestyle. We'd like to thank the amazing people at Valley Contacts who have made this podcast possible, makers of stellar gas permeable lenses and the oh-so-incredible custom stable scleral lens. In case you're wondering, I'm on the East Coast, and I'm Dr. James Diem, joined by my talented co-host, repping the West Coast, Dr. Roya Habibi. What is up, Roya?
It's April. We're all
Quarantined.
So if you've been quarantined, you're now safe to see other quarantiners if they've been in quarantine for 2 weeks.
And maybe share a quarantini.
Why not? No, but for real, I've been trying to maybe I just want to convince myself that I need personal interaction. I've been talking to some of my friends if you've honestly been quarantined for 2 weeks and I've been quarantined for two weeks, I think we can hang out. I think we can social distance together now.
That's kind of where you're at in Seattle. Like a lot of folks have been quarantined,
I haven't seen anyone except my husband or my dogs for 13 days.
Except if I
go out on a walk and I...
You're good. After tomorrow, are you going to...
Oh, I'm past. I'm 2 days past now. But it's so odd. I go out on a walk and people, if I'm walking, they're on the same sidewalk as me, they walk to the other sidewalk. It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah. Well, this is going to... And we're going to talk about this at some point. I mean, this is going to have some real social ramifications, right? Like people are going to be... I talk to doctors, I was talking to our cataract surgeon today. And, he's like, oh, yeah, we're going to, really ramp up cataract surgery first week of May. And I'm just like, dude, I don't know how the heck, I don't know. And I don't even know how anybody's going to ramp stuff up to any considerable level. I mean, are people going to sit in a waiting room together? Like, is that really going to happen? Are we going to have to, right now what we're doing, with emergencies, we're scheduling them, half hour apart if we have any to schedule, and they're waiting in the parking lot and they call us and then we come and get them, bring them in one at a time.
Crazy.
So, the people that feel comfortable to leave, even talking about the people are just, I'm not even leaving my house. Like, no way.
Yeah. But I think about the people too who are perhaps really OCD or have anxiety already about going outside and germs. I mean, yeah, who knows? A little drama just to cut this topic a little bit. But, I got a text message from my mom the other day, and she was like, what do you think about this article? She sends me an article from Washington, D.C.'s leading news source, WUSA9, okay? And the title is, Contact Lens Wearers Urged to Switch to Contacts to Prevent Coronavirus. No,
it should have said, urged to switch to LASIK.
I know, right? So I'm going to talk on that for a second. But before I do that, I just Googled, literally put the topic, the headline, the name of the article into Google. Let me read you the top five searches from San Francisco CRON. This is their big source. Contact lens wearers urged to switch. From something, I don't know where this is, WVLT, contact lens wearers urge to switch. From TGNA, contact lens wearers urge to switch. Like all of Fox 17.
Everybody has the same headline.
Everyone is saying it. And when you read it, the reference is from the American Academy of Ophthalmology. Now listen to what they say. They note that droplets caused by someone coughing or sneezing can get into your eye. Touching a surface that has a virus, then touching the eyes causes an infection. The Academy says that switching to glasses would not only cut down the number of times a person touches their face, potentially true, but the glasses can serve as an extra layer of protection against these droplets that could contain the virus. Mm. In the rare cases people have been found that are infected with coronavirus to develop a conjunctivitis, this happens in 1-3% of people with the virus. So
you don't necessarily have to get a conjunctivitis if it gets in your eye.
No,
right?
It
could just spread,
I think ultimately what I think as a recommendation for people I mean, if somebody is a minus nine or has keratoconus, should they not wear their contacts? No. In fact, if you're wearing a scleral lens, perhaps that is even more beneficial or more protective. But I think realistically, don't touch your face, right?
Wash your hands.
I don't think it's a reason to discourage, but I mean, having a pair of glasses as a safety frame is potentially protective because you're going to be less likely to touch your eyes. And you do touch your eyes more when you have contacts. As a side note, as a practitioner, you also need to follow some extra strict guidelines for contact lens hygiene in your office. And I know most of us aren't providing any routine care anymore, but you should not be reusing any contact lens cases in your office, and you should not reuse trial contact lenses without strict, proper disinfection. There is an Academy disinfection procedure guideline I'm going to link on here. And perhaps we'll have another episode on truly how to disinfect contact lenses in the future. But yeah, so that is not necessarily a recommendation to not wear your contacts. But if you're touching your eyes all the time with your contacts in, then yeah, stop touching your eyes and wear your glasses.
There you go.
I want to just touch on this. There's a whole load of things we're going to talk about, including during our discussion today, but just about my personal experience. And I think it might be helpful for some other people to hear this because all of this is kind of overwhelming, especially if you are doing a little work still. It makes it a lot harder to think about all the things that you need to think about. But for anyone that has loans that they are working with, whether it be your business loan, your student loans, your home loans, your car loans, like any loans you might have, every single loan option I just mentioned has some sort of option right now in place to extend your payment, or has options for forbearance or loan deferment at this time. I may have shared with everyone that I recently purchased a home end of February, and so that's obviously a point of contention. We have a lot of money saved to be able to pay for a couple months or be fine for a while without any income. But because my unemployment status through our home mortgage loan, we were able to apply for a 3-month loan deferment that actually has a non-accruing interest, which is pretty great. I also changed my student loans. I refinanced through Laurel Road. Thanks, Jimmy, for the referral.
You got it.
But Mohela, who manages Laurel Road's payments, they actually have a 3-month forbearance plan that's permitted so long as you have an unemployment status. They may even do it for other reasons as well. But I applied for that. It literally was a 3-minute phone call. It was extremely easy to apply for.
That's awesome.
And then car loans as well. I have a car loan through a local credit union in the area called BECU, where they also gave a 3-month deferment or forbearance option. So
awesome. It's
a simple phone call. And a lot of these, even if you go on their websites, your different banks' websites, they'll have the option very easy to find. Not that these things are going to be bills that are going to hit you all at once, like 3 months payment all at once. For my home loan, for example, my home loan is a 30-year loan, but now it's a 30-year plus 3 extra months loan. So they're just pushing everything back, which is pretty great.
They'll get their money.
right. They're going to find me.
It's like, don't you worry. We'll still get this.
Right.
We might even add a little interest on top.
A little bit, but it's not a huge burden.
But yeah,
burden.
It gives you some breathing room, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I think that's the thing. Everybody's, you know,
a little less to worry about.
Decision to buy this house and you thought about it. You didn't just do it overnight, right? I mean, went into it kind of thinking, all right, I'm going to have this money.
We planned well. Right.
Yeah.
We had the money you're supposed to save for multiple months of not working, which everyone's like, why do I need that?
Right.
I.e. me. And then now, luckily, we had that because my husband's responsible.
Yeah, that's smart. Most people do not have that.
I know.
So that's...
Other people waiving dues right now. AOA has waived dues for all members for the next 2 months. Waive is wrong. Delayed payment. A little radio silence when it comes to AAO on if you had to pay dues or if they're going to delay their due payments. And
lots of states are too. I know, you know, Pennsylvania, I'm on the Pennsylvania Optometric Association board, and we recently voted to give members the opportunity to waive essentially 2 months of dues. It's a complicated decision though, because a lot of people have paid their dues up front, or they pay quarterly And so when you talk about doing 2 months or 3 months, and did they pay it already? Did they use a credit card? If they used a credit card, then, you know, you take a 3% hit as an association to do that. And then if you pay them back through the credit card, then you pay another 3% to do that. So then you're down 6%. Like, you know, it's interesting to be on the other side of that. So, you know, I'll say as an avid association member and supporter, you know, if you're able to support your associations in this time and still able to, you know, swing some of that, I'd recommend doing it. It's tough for the associations, especially, you know, a lot of the associations make their money on the meetings. And the money is what allows them to produce, you know, all the different things that they do throughout the year and support the profession to the extent that they do. A lot of the meetings aren't happening. You know, our big state meeting in Pennsylvania was canceled. It's in May. It'll be canceled. Optometry's meeting at the end of June is still on. Lots of discussion about that. So hopefully it does happen. I know we have big plans, at Try Not to Blink for, optometry's meeting, but, certainly we're holding those close to the vest, to see if that is going to happen. Academy being in the fall is a much better chance, I would say, at this point, but who knows? This could go on for quite some time.
Totally. Speaking of quite some time, things that we have to worry about as a practice, whether you are a employee or an employer, everyone's talking about this right now. And actually, last week, anyone who follows 2020 Glance, which I highly recommend it if you don't already, but 2020 Glance in combo with Modern Optometry, they put out a survey on COVID practice response survey, and they had around 160 participants. And I'm going to link the results for anyone who's interested. But one of the questions was, if you're a practice owner, what are you doing with your employees? 5% people, this was a week old now data, but 5% said they're continuing to pay them. 11% saying they're announcing layoffs. 13 announcing furloughs, and 1% terminating. There's that gap because many of the responders were employees. For the employees, the question was, what's your current situation? 25% said they were still getting paid normally. 22% had been laid off. 35% had been furloughed, and 1% had been terminated. So that's kind of a inspiration for our guest tonight.
All right. Finally, here we are. We are very excited to have an expert, a legal expert, an attorney, a real life attorney with an optometry problem. He's got a fun history, and we're gonna jump right in with attorney Seth Corbin. He is hailing out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and so a fellow Pennsylvanianite. Pennsylvanian here with us today. We've met several times. He actually handled several legal issues in our practice. He's handled our partnership agreement, and so I'm very grateful for his support in that arena. He's happens to be the son of an optometrist who I respect greatly, somebody in our local area, Dr. Glenn Corbin, a really well-known optometrist throughout the country, and also I believe his grandfather was an optometrist also, and so lots of history in the optometry world, but we're going to jump into that. He is really an expert in many, many different areas, and if you check out his website, you'll see he encompasses many aspects of law, including corporate law, employee pension and welfare benefits, executive compensation, employment law, estate planning, health law, and taxation, all things that just make me so excited, and I'm sure all of you as well. But right now, with everything going on and all of the world as we know it sort of being flipped upside down, especially when it comes to employment, income, and all the things therein, because the world's basically been put on hold, legal opinions in this area are important. And so we wanted to reach out to somebody who knew a hell of a lot more about it than us, and he was the man. So, Attorney Corbin, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Well, I appreciate the introduction. I don't know if it sounded like something my mother might have written. I don't know if I've ever been introduced with such flowery words, but no, I appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity to speak with you guys and hopefully can shed a little bit of light and insight on all things COVID-19 as it relates to the world of optometry and medical practices generally, and a big portion of my client base is dealing with small, closely held companies, medical practices. So I suspect the challenges that optometrists are facing in today's climate are not different from other colleagues or peers in the medical field. And I am regularly talking to all of these folks day in and day out, trying to navigate what is otherwise a very fluid and changing situation.
Absolutely. Wow. I mean, we have a lot to talk about. Every forum you look at right now is all of these different professionals panicking kind of on like, what do we do? Which of these options do we pick? All these new acts and care acts and blah, blah, blah are all coming up. But I think the more important thing that I need to know from you, behind the scenes, we were just chatting about how you've been off, not off, you've been working, of course, but you've been working from home for the past 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And what I'd like to know is, what have you been doing to keep yourself from going crazy right now?
Well, I've got two school-age daughters at home with me. So all of a sudden, I've got new different coworkers. So balancing, whether it's having recess with them, meaning, you know, walks outside when the weather cooperates.
Yes.
But yeah, having a second grader and a kindergartner at home it presents a little bit of a distraction that I wasn't used to going into the office.
My two coworkers, aside from my husband, which we've actually banished each other to different floors. We luckily have an upstairs and downstairs, very small house, but we have our floors. But my two dogs are my coworkers because he can't have them around them. And I am currently unemployed, so it's great for him. But they just get all up in my grill. They just want to be next to me, on top of me, whether I'm doing yoga or trying to learn something. They're like all on top of me. I also decided that one Thin Mint cookie a day is a good cure. It's like a spoonful of sugar.
The COVID-19 actually stands for the amount of weight that you gain by being home. I don't know if you knew that. It doesn't have anything to do with 2019.
Yeah, I'm living that.
Anyway. Yeah.
It's just the way it is, man. Anyway, good. I want to get to know you real quick here. Again, I gave our listeners a little bit of a background, but you grew up in Pennsylvania, right?
Correct. I grew up on the eastern side of Pennsylvania in the Reading area.
Awesome. And just as a little bit of background, you know, I mentioned optometry being a strong part of your history. Do you mind giving a little bit of your personal background in that optometry arena?
Sure. So my father's a practicing optometrist in the Reading, Wyomissing, Pennsylvania area for the last, 40 years, and has a number of offices in eastern Pennsylvania and a well-established practice. And he followed in the footsteps of his father, my grandfather, who's an optometrist in New York. And so optometry is certainly, even though it wasn't my area of profession to pursue, I certainly have optometry in my blood. Based
so you know
on
that's
growing
the next
up in and around it.
That's the next question, right? Why not optometry? I mean, it's
growing up, I always like to argue too much. I think I knew from a very young age that I wanted to get into law. Maybe not knowing that I would ultimately end up representing doctors and working with physicians. Yeah. But there's probably some element of growing up in an optometry household that lent itself to being interested in working with physicians and so, you know, it's been helpful and certainly been great to be able to work with my dad and his practice, work with practices like yours. And it's something I really enjoy.
So fast forward to law school. You go to law school. You went to the University of Pittsburgh, really well-known, highly respected law school, correct? That's That's what I read, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Not the well-respected part, just, I mean, that's obvious, but the fact that you went there, and then, I mean, I don't know that everybody knows this, and I don't think I really knew it. You go to law school, and then what do? Do you just jump right into practice? Isn't there, like, some sort of internship phase where you're kind of like a resident almost? You're doing lots of, like, you know, I've watched Better Call Saul, so that's where I've learned pretty much everything there is to know about law.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you to forget everything you've watched on Better Call Saul.
Oh shit!
You don't have a commercial,
right? But you know, I think there's a summer associate, you know, positions while you're in law school. So there's a kind of an apprenticeship program, if you will, that I was a part of, actually, with my current firm. Where the summers in between my second and third year. You spend the summer essentially working as an associate. And then, you know, when you're a young associate, you are more or less thrown into the fire. The kinds of work you're getting are obviously different than the kinds of work I'm doing now. And there's a learning curve, but there is no formal training in between law school, taking the bar exam, and then, you know, diving in feet first. And it's sink or swim. You kind of figure it out as you go. And there's certainly a learning curve, but you get right into it.
Cool. And so then you join this is a national law firm with practices all over the country. And how do you grow in that area? And how do you determine what your area of expertise is? We talked about your areas of expertise. They seem pretty focused, but there's a couple different avenues, it sounds like to me. But so how did you develop your focus? And then how do you grow within a large practice like this?
Sure. So I think some of the areas of focus just tend to be when you're a young lawyer and you're coming out of school looking for job opportunities, you know, try to find a job that identifies with your interests. So I wanted to do transactional work. I'm not really interested in being a litigator. We have in our firm plenty of litigators. I mean, we've got close to 950 lawyers in 16 states and 27 or 28 offices across the country. So a pretty large network of lawyers who you know, pretty much there's nothing we don't do. But as far as the lawyers, when I started working in our office in Pittsburgh as a young associate, I had an opportunity to connect with some established healthcare lawyers, with some established corporate lawyers, and really train and learn under them, and just took to it and working with their clients and going out and marketing and developing my own clients. The field of law is not different than many other businesses where they don't teach you in law school, but you know, marketing and selling your services is a big part developing your own practice, and you know, whether it's speaking or publishing and making sure that you get out there and let people know who you are and what you're doing. It's an important part of helping build a practice and gaining that experience.
I actually saw on your website that you were scheduled to do a speaking engagement at the Pittsburgh Medical School Center for Endocrinology. I thought that was kind of interesting. So what were you doing there?
Yeah. So, when we go to medical school, sometimes residents and young, you know, doctors who are looking to negotiate their first employment contract don't really know what they're getting involved with.
Totally.
I've got a nice, you know, presentation and Q&A, you know, an ability to usually works best with small groups so you can have a really interactive kind of experience and just talk with, you know, young doctors in training as to what to expect and what to look for as that process unfolds for them.
I think I think a lot of just medical professionals in general and medical training programs, whether it be medicine, optometry, dentistry, like we don't learn anything about business. We don't learn anything about finance. We don't learn any legal tips. Just like don't get sued.
Right.
But like there's so much more to living and thriving. So I think that's awesome to do that.
Absolutely. Well, let's jump. What do you think, Roy? Jump into it. Here we go. Let's get down to brass tacks and get to what we, you know, what you're here for tonight. So, you know, the big talk right now is layoffs, right? There's unprecedented amounts of individuals on unemployment. You know, we were just at, you know, unprecedented limited levels of employment and lowest levels of unemployment, you know, a couple months ago. And here we are with, you know, millions of folks applying for unemployment and being laid off or furloughed. And so you hear these words and you could Google them, but there's obviously more meaning to them. And that's what we're looking for you to sort of shed some light on. So let's just ask you, you know, furlough, layoff, what do those things mean to you? What do we need to know about it?
Sure. And it's a question I've been fielding a lot over the last, you know, week or two as practices, you know, adjust to the current situation. So I think real quick, you know, as it relates to unemployment, I think there are two causes and they're obviously related. There's obviously the pandemic that's causing businesses around the country to be forced to close by, you know, state orders, usually governors ordering the shutdown of businesses. And then there's also based on action taken by the federal government to expand the money available to states for unemployment compensation that has essentially led to a trend of employers encouraging employees to go seek unemployment. And certainly that's happening, you know, at unprecedented levels. Applications for unemployment are higher than they've ever been in light of the current circumstances. And most states, and unemployment is done on a state-by-state basis, so each state has their own unemployment compensation program, but most states are greatly expanding eligibility as it relates to unemployment benefits, both to eligibility and then the underlying benefits being offered. So you've got, you know, all of these you know, causes at play here that gives rise to this becoming such a hot topic. So to get back to your question as to what does it mean to be furloughed versus being laid off, is a furlough is a concept. There are no, you don't check a different box when you tell an employee you're either furloughed or laid off or terminated. But a furlough is really intended to be a non-permanent unpaid leave of absence, meaning that technically they are still employed, they're not working, they're not being paid. One of the critical differences in that notation is that they're likely going to remain eligible for benefits. So something like health insurance, potentially other fringe benefits. Whereas if you're terminated, you're typically triggering termination of your rights to participate in most of those fringe benefit programs. For example, most group health insurance plans, once you're terminated, it triggers a right to participate on COBRA, but not as an actively employed employee. So you know, perhaps a nuanced difference. Same thing with qualified retirement plans. So a 401k plan, if you're actually terminated, the effect of that is you've maybe triggered a right to a termination under the plan. Your vesting might change under the plan or cease to continue to accrue. Whereas if you're furloughed and you're not terminated, you know, it's again, it's a nuanced difference, but obviously a pretty critically important one to make those distinctions in today's climate.
So this is probably a stupid question, but when you say terminated, is that the same thing as being laid off?
Yes.
So fired or laid off, same thing.
Correct. I'm using those terms interchangeably.
So for, obviously practices have the decision, especially practice owners have the decision they need to make on which one is going to work better for them. Mm-hmm. But for our employees, our associates and whatnot, because so many practices are in this awkward position where they're just like kind of fumbling to figure out what's going on, as everyone is, how do employees or associates protect themselves, you know, requesting sure. some sort of formality or recommending or, you know, what would you say to that?
Sure. In most instances, for the time being, it's not going to make a significant difference except for things like health insurance. And the reason being is that because the unemployment compensation eligibility has been expanded so greatly in almost every state throughout the country, that being furloughed or being unemployed via a formal termination or being laid off is going to trigger the right to the same benefits under your state's unemployment compensation law. And so, you know, the when all of this started to change as a result of, you know, COVID-19 really becoming the pandemic that we're all, you know, unfortunately, you know, very accustomed to and aware of now, as this was happening 2-3 weeks ago, 10 days ago, and people were worried about making sure, you know, from the employer perspective, how do I best position my employees to be made whole, to be able to make sure that they can pay their bills. I, the employer, I'm not going to have cash flow to be able to make payroll indefinitely. What can I do proactively? Those are the questions I'm getting to make sure my employees are best positioned to be able to get whatever benefits are available to them under, you know, the expanded unemployment compensation law. And so the answer as it relates to furlough or laying someone off or terminating them is that it probably won't make a difference. Where it is going to make a difference is potentially what you intend to do regarding health insurance. So again, if someone is furloughed, in theory, they're still, you know, the concept there being that they're still employed, even though they are on unpaid leave, and they would remain eligible for health insurance. Now, I will also add, because this, of course, can't be so simple, that many health insurers throughout the country, I certainly know in Pennsylvania, are coming out and saying, even if you laid people off, we are not going to require you to put them on COBRA. We're going to allow them to remain on your health insurance plan for a certain period of time. I know in Western Pennsylvania, the predominant insurers have come out and said, you know, you can stay on health insurance through the end of June, even if you're terminated. So again, some of it's just paying attention to what's happening in your jurisdiction. Totally. But for unemployment compensation benefit purposes, it really shouldn't matter. Where it tends to matter as far as a long-term strategy is most practices I speak with, their message or their concern to me is when all of this settles down and we return to something approaching normal, we want to be able to hit the ground running. We want our people to be able to come back as quickly as possible. And we want to be, you know, in a position where they're going to do that. So most practices are trying to do something along the lines of furloughing, keeping people on benefit plans. They're not trying to take benefits away and keep them on unpaid leave, let them collect unemployment. And then I know we're going to talk a little bit about some of the loan options available to small businesses that are being made available and seeing how that all plays out, whether they bring people back early, whether they're able to bring them back for payroll purposes, even if their office isn't able to be operational. So, you know, that's really kind of the long-term play here is to figure out how do we get from where we are today to hopefully, whether it's, you know, May, June, July, whenever it's going to be that we, you know, approach to something, you know, back to normalcy where practices and other businesses are up and running, you know, how do we get from where we are today through that period of time?
Well, so sorry, one quick question.
Yeah, go ahead.
You're kind of touching on this, like, especially for the point of like getting back, getting up and running as soon as we can and trying to go back to normal. But when it comes to furlough versus laying off, especially for the purpose of, especially like associates, right? Many associates have a contractual agreement with their doctor that they employer. Work with, employer, yeah. Right? So laying them off, how does that work with your contract, right? Is that now, I don't know, do you have more...
Is it broken?
Do you have more protection with a furlough as opposed to a layoff?
No. So the answer here, here's the lawyer answer. It depends. Yeah. So it depends what the contract says. So I've got lots of practices I work with and lots of physicians that are coming and saying, okay, you know, what am I allowed to do? And
yeah.
Typically one of the first things I'll say back is, what does your contract say? So it would not be unusual for an employment contract to include some sort of termination without cause provision. Typically, there is a notice required. So whether it's 30, 60, 90 days. So you've got an employment contract that says, you know, I'll just use a very simple example to say you get paid X amount of dollars. You've got, you know, a salary doctor. And it says, you know, the term of the contract is a year and then thereafter from year to year. So in order to terminate it, you either have to have a for cause termination scenario. Likely doesn't exist, certainly not related to COVID-19.
Right.
No one's breached the contract. No one's done anything wrong. And then in all likelihood, there is some not for cause termination provision that requires notice, or typically in employment contracts, certainly that we're writing or that I would encourage people to have would have some sort of notice provision relative to a no cause termination. The issue becomes when you've got, whether it's 30, 60 or 90 days, is do we have to pay that doctor their full compensation during that notice period? And do we even really want to give them a notice of termination.
Right.
And my, you know, these are unprecedented times. So, you know, it certainly depends on the practice. Lots of practices that I've been working with have approached their doctors, associates, shareholders, partners, and said, you know, basically, we're all in this together. The idea here is that we're all coming out on the other end of this with a healthy practice and a bit able to survive it. And I've got lots of practices that are proposing across the board, owners, shareholders, associates, taking the same cut or, you know, feeling the heat and everyone basically agreeing to something different than what is in the contract. And I've had conversations with doctors and they say, well, what happens when the when my associate says, no, my contract says I'm going to be paid whatever it says. I'm not going to agree something different. And you know, typically my frank response to them is that really someone you want to have a long-term relationship with? And that's not because, you know, everyone's circumstances are different and I appreciate that. But these are again, unprecedented times where certainly what's going on and the financial pressures that practices are feeling is nobody's fault. This is not right. A matter of poor planning. This isn't a matter of running your business poorly. This is an issue of cash flow. And not, you know, if you're not seeing patients, you don't have the ability to turn around and pay your staff, to pay your doctors, and to pay yourself.
Right.
I mean, the money's just not coming in a lot of jurisdictions where practices aren't able to operate at all, or maybe they're operating on a very limited basis where they can only see emergencies.
Totally.
Interesting.
So, you know.
And what about, too, for any doctors that do, like an example, my office, we've laid off essentially everyone except a skeleton crew. It's a pretty common trend. It sounds like what a lot of doctors' offices are doing.
I want to see what this skeleton crew is. Are they people that come in with like the like a skeleton outfit? Like,
not funny. Too soon. What about all the patients that I'm like managing still? You know, like all these patients that are calling me with issues. Is it legally allowed for me to keep caring for them? You know, under... And that's maybe a stupid question. Like, of course I'm going to help them, but how do I help them? How do doctors, associates that are laid off or furloughed, is it more appropriate if you are laid off to not and defer back to the practice, or is there any legal
ramification? So you're describing a situation in which you are currently not an actively employed, I mean, whether you're furloughed or terminated, but your patients are reaching out to you personally.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, in that case, I would recommend referring them to the practice.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm sure.
I mean, in most cases, when someone's an employed doctor, the patients are patients of the practice, not the patients of that doctor individually. And so, you know, again, I'm not sure that you're going to create any trouble for yourself necessarily, but I think the wise thing to do and the prudent thing to do would be to refer them to the practice. And certainly, I think people will appreciate that in light of, again, these pretty unique circumstances that they might not have access to the same people they otherwise would normally have under, you know, usual, you know, normal times.
Totally.
So let's jump into the acts and the legislation. So, I mean, I know we could have a whole thing, and in fact, you have a whole thing on this, right? Your law firm has some fantastic resources, if I'm correct.
Sure. So the firm Fox Rothschild, we have a tremendous coronavirus resource page that is filled with more information than anyone could possibly go through.
Awesome.
Although I guess maybe I shouldn't say that. A lot of people are home with a lot of time on their hands. but certainly a tremendous resource from both an employer and an employee perspective about all of the changes relative to the most recently passed laws, explanations as to obligations of employers, certainly the benefits that are being provided under the new, you know, Families First Coronavirus Response Act. That's the FFCRA, with all of the new paid sick leave laws that are applicable to lots of employers who had never had to implement or offer those types of benefits to employees previously.
So I'm gonna stop you there. So let's just take that for just 2 minutes. The Family First Act, that was the first thing that passed a couple weeks ago, right?
Correct. That passed March 18th and became effective April 1.
Okay. And so that was to help with mainly unemployment, right? Like getting on unemployment benefits, layoff benefits, and there's extra money available for people that did claim unemployment or get laid off. Is that, am I right about that, or what is?
No, that the FFCRA, the Family First Coronavirus Response Act, was to add new paid leave. So paid new sick paid leave.
Okay.
2 weeks of paid sick leave to all employees of employers under 500 employees. So what the government was considering small employers. So certainly most, you know, private medical practices are going to fall in that category, as well as an extended FMLA style leave. So FMLA typically is unpaid leave for up to 12 weeks for employees of employers that have at least 50 full-time equivalent employees. So this is a new paid style FMLA leave. Again, these are all triggered based on COVID-19 related absences. These are not intended to be broader paid sick leaves, but
you have to be either yourself or someone around you sick with COVID-19. Is that
correct? Okay. Or you could be triggered if, for example, your child's daycare or school is closed, which a lot of people are experiencing across the country, could trigger the right to the FMLA style paid leave, as well as if you are forced to stay home due to some sort of government isolation order or quarantine order. But again, all COVID-19 related.
And how long does that last for?
So that lasts through the end of this calendar year.
Oh, wow. But how long would the FMLA be good for? Would that be good from April 1 to the end?
No. It's still 12 weeks, similar 12 weeks. To traditional FMLA style leave. And the paid sick leave is 2 weeks. So depending on the circumstances, an employee might be entitled to either 100% of their pay or 2/3 of their pay. Again, it's just circumstances driven. But that's right. A new obligation for small employers, and it's certainly something that employers with fewer than 50 employees, which represents a lot of my clients, are having to deal with for the very first time.
Right. Okay. So that was that one. And then the CARES Act was the next one, right?
Sure. And the CARES Act is the more recently passed law, and that includes what is, you know, the new SBA loan opportunities. So that's,
and SBA, what does that stand for?
Small Business Administration.
Okay.
So the SBA has obviously existed long before the CARES Act was ever enacted, and has always been an opportunity for small employers to seek lending, borrowing opportunities, and there have been loan programs in place for a long time, some of which continue to exist. So, for example, in light of COVID-19, EIDL or Economic Injury Disaster loans are something that a lot of people are talking about, something that you can apply for directly through the SBA. That has always existed. That's not a new creation under the CARES Act. That's not newly, you know, becoming available as a result of COVID-19. So that's always existed. What the CARES Act has done is modified what was previously called a 7A loan under the, you know, offered by the SBA. And really revamped that program and offered something slightly different that allows employers, small employers, an opportunity to essentially borrow up to 2.5 times their average monthly payroll costs. And payroll costs is kind of a term of art. It's not just what you're paying your employees. It's a slightly expanded overhead cost relative to making that calculation. Borrowing 2.5 times that average monthly amount, and then using those funds for forgivable usage. So you, if you, over the 8 weeks following your receipt of that loan, use the loan proceeds for SBA approved expenses, which are generally things like payroll costs, your wages, your compensation, retirement benefits, fringe benefits like health insurance, paying your rent, your mortgage, your utilities. If you use the loan proceeds for the 8 weeks following your receipt of the funds, most of, if not all of what you spend relative to those things is forgivable. So this is really one of those few times where, you know, if you were to describe something like this 6 months ago, Someone would have told you were crazy. This is too good to be true. It sounds like free money. In this instance, it truly is designed to be that way. And obviously the catch is you got to bring your employees back. If you get the money, you've got to use the money to pay your employees. So theoretically, it's not really all that different if the government is paying your employees via unemployment and they're not working. If instead they can pay you, the employer, the practice, the same money, and you're able to bring them back on your payroll, whether or not they're working a lot, a little, or nothing at all, but you bring them back and pay them, well, they're no longer going to be eligible for unemployment, but they're going to be made whole, and you're going to be able to keep them on your payroll and really keep your practice together. So again, the idea being that when we return to something close to normal, everyone's still there, everyone's been getting paid, everyone's been receiving their same benefits, through May, through June, and you hit the ground running when all of these, current restrictions that we're all experiencing throughout the country are lifted and people start, coming back to your practices.
So you said it's forgivable, the money, you're just going to be able to pay for your practice for perhaps 2 months and not have to pay that back.
Correct. For whatever you use for that is a permitted forgivable usage.
Right.
And whatever you don't use for those purposes, remains a loan. So, interestingly, the SBA has kind of defined the terms, the loan terms more recently. And those terms are, you've got 0.5% interest. That's 0.5% interest. And these loans are going to have two-year loan terms with 6 months of deferred payments. So no principal or interest for those first 6 months. So what I've been advising practices is apply for the loan. It's a great opportunity. And even if you end up borrowing more than ends up being forgiven, there's no prepayment penalties. You've got an opportunity to decide what you want to do based on how the loan forgiveness shakes out for you. If you want to pay it back quickly, nothing precludes you from doing so. Alternatively, if you've got additional cash to use for, business operations, ongoing business operations, and to help improve your cash flow, there are very few opportunities to borrow money at 0.5% over 2 years. I think anyone listening who runs a practice can appreciate that. So, it's
sounds
it's
like a the
nice
kind of loan you get from
practices.
Like your parents.
Exactly.
You don't have to pay me back 0.5% interest.
Yeah.
It really does sound too good to be true.
Just guilt.
Right.
It's not an endless amount of money. It can run out, right? So, is that something that you think would, be possible? I know, if you look at our message boards, and this is one of the reasons we wanted to get you on here so quick. This just happened within the last week or so. And everybody's, their heads are spinning. The banks just got the information because you mentioned the SBA. Those SBAs exist in banks, right? Am I correct about that? Is that an accurate statement?
So, right, the CARES Act loan, the new, it's really called a Payroll Protection Program loan, is available through traditional commercial lenders that are SBA approved lenders. I think there are something like 1,800 banks throughout the country that are already SBA approved lenders. So it is not difficult to find a commercial lending institution that is familiar with and can help process this particular loan. Whereas the first loan we talked about, the EIDL, the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, which doesn't include a forgiveness component, that you apply for directly through the SBA. So, the CARES Act loans, though, are all through commercial lenders.
Got it.
So I guess in theory, if we could predicted the future, from what I'm understanding, the best thing to have done would have been to furlough your staff until you get this CARES Act set up, and then have that going, work to whatever capacity you can, depending on your profession. Ideally for us, maybe it's ordering stuff online. Whatever you can do from home / a little bit in the office if you're able to do so. And then once the CDC advises that it's okay to go back to normal, you can do so. And
sure.
Ideally and take off the least amount of time, waste the least time getting things back in order.
Yes, all of that is true. And in doing that, hopefully you've kept everyone as whole as possible relative to what they would have been had none of this ever happened. I think it's unrealistic to think that any of us are going to be made whole. I think everyone is is collectively going to share the pain, even though you know, this money's been made available, or folks have enhanced unemployment benefit opportunities. I think the reality is that we're all going to be taking a hit. The question is if we can kind of, you know, significantly ease the pain and make sure that, again, when things return to normal, that we're all in a position to hit the ground running.
Totally.
Yeah. So, folks, Attorney Corbin is, you know, the man when it comes to understanding all this stuff, but also just having the knowledge of medical practices, and in particular, optometric practices, not only with his personal history growing up around one, but also because he's done a lot of professional work within optometry practices, dealing with contracts and employment law within optometry practices. So you heard, you know, they have lots of great resources on the Fox Rothschild website, which we will provide the URL in the show notes. And there's also a webinar on there that will be available. So check that out. It is free to watch, and you're certainly welcome to reach out directly to Attorney Corbin, and if he is able to help you based on, you know, state laws, et cetera, he certainly will. If not, I know that attorneys are, I'll say this, and maybe you'll laugh, they're very generous. And what I mean by that is that they are generous in a way to support their colleagues. And optometrists aren't like this too often, unfortunately, that many optometrists don't refer to other optometrists. So I know lawyers are really good at being generous with their other colleagues. In other words, you support your colleagues and you know that something's not in your jurisdiction, either specialty or legality because of state laws. You say, no, I'm not the guy. This is the guy. You got to go to this guy and or gal, of course, and they're going to hook you up. They're going to, you know, get you what you need. And of course, you know, you'll be able to chat with the person, give them an estimate on what that would look like. Does that sound accurate?
No, that's absolutely true. And like I said, my firm, we've got offices across the country. And if we don't have someone in your jurisdiction and can't help you directly, we've got access to networks throughout the country to make sure we can connect you with the right people.
Awesome.
And not just law dealing with COVID-19, right? I mean, you guys do, right? What, I mean, pretty much anything and everything when it comes to your practice, you can handle.
Correct. Yeah. Until a week ago, I did lots of things other than COVID-19 related counseling. So yeah, all sorts of, you know, we're a full service firm. Again, working with medical practices regularly, I help with all sorts of corporate transactional partner shareholder thing, you know, hospital agreements. It really runs the gamut in healthcare and working with small business clients. So, yeah, we do it all.
Perfect.
Awesome.
And one last question is a goofy one, and then we'll stop. What is your spirit animal? This is probably the most important question. We ask all of our guests what their spirit animal is. Roya, can you tell them what a spirit animal is?
As you think about this, spirit animal, if you've never heard this term before, is the animal that defines you and your personality, who you are, what, like, it. Your friends would be like, yeah, that's you. That's the type of person you are.
Well, it's interesting. So I don't know that I've ever actually been asked this question by another adult, but my kids have asked me similar questions. And because I went to the University of Pittsburgh for both undergrad and for law school, it is very easy, and I very regularly answer to them in this sort of context that I am a Panther through and through. So, you know, it's not a difficult thing for me to think of. And, you know, I think my kids, if you had asked them, both my daughters would have said the same thing.
There you go.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
True and true.
You know, the only thing that's talked about more than COVID-19 right now is Tiger King. So that's going to be my be my new spirit animal, Tiger King.
I like it.
Anyway.
Jimmy Exotic.
There you go. Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, shoot. Lord. Well, honestly, thank you so much and have a great evening.
That about does it. Before we go, reach out to us for feedback, questions, stories, things you want us to talk about, either on our Instagram or Facebook, or call or text us 920-350-8622. We can't depart without saying thanks to Valley Contacts for their support, both for the amazing lenses they make and the great people they are to work with. And be sure and tune in and listen to our next episode. But until then, try not to blink.